Yud. We're on Perek Yud Aleph. We're going to start Pasuk Chof. Pasuk 20. Okay, we're learning about the kosher animals, the kosher fish, the trefa fish, the birds, and now it's getting into the what's called the sherets, the shirotzim, the flying sherets and the creepy sherets. Okay, so I think this pasuk we learned, but just to, not to start in the middle. Kol sherets ha'eif ha'elech al arba, any sherets ha'eif, meaning flying, swarming creatures, like flies, hornets, grasshoppers, you know, all these types of things. That ha'elech al arba, that goes on four legs, sheketu lochem, is abominable. Now, generally speaking, all flying creatures are forbidden. The Torah is going to say a few which will be permitted. By the way, the Mefarshim, as we mentioned this last time, that L'chayra, these bugs have six legs, not four legs. How come the Torah says four? But the Torah says, ha'elech al arba. So there's two legs in front that they jump with, that they fly with. But the actual going, the Mefarshim explained, is actually four legs. Now it says like this. What's the difference between these things and birds? It says like this. Birds always walk with their heads up. You see a bird, they're always, their heads are up. These creatures, these bugs, their heads are always down. And they walk on four legs and so on. Okay, so the pasuk says like this. These are the flying bugs that you're allowed to eat. He says like this. One that has, even though it says in the Chumash with an aleph, but it's really reading with a vav, which means to eat. It has jumping legs above its legs, to spring on the earth. Okay, so the Torah is going to give a few examples of the flying creatures that would be kosher. Now, as we said last time, the Mefarshim point out, even though the Gemara gives certain like interpretations and descriptions of what it is, we are not certain what they are, and therefore all these flying bugs and creatures and grasshoppers and all that are today are forbidden. This is what you're allowed to eat. And again, it's going to say, when even in the English, it's going to say a transliteration rather than translate them, because it's questionable what each one of these things mean. Okay? Ha'arba, normally arba is translated in English as locusts. Okay? Like the plague arba in Mitzrayim. As a solemn laminehu, the solemn in its kind. Okay, and again, we don't know exactly what this is. There's a chargo lemineo, the chargo to its kind, there's a chog of lemineo, and the chog of to its kind. These are the only types of flying grasshoppers or locusts that you would be allowed to eat. But again, because we don't know what they are, the Mefarshim don't even translate them into any language, because it's totally irrelevant. You're not allowed to eat them anyway. It doesn't say when we forgot about it, but remember we were speaking last week, last time about the shofar we forgot and the extended period of gold. It doesn't say exactly when. You know, you can have places that didn't have these, or people that didn't live in certain areas because the goyim didn't let the Jews live there. Okay, so certain places that might have had traditionally the kosher grasshoppers, but it could be for hundreds of years Jews didn't live there. So they didn't, they weren't connected to it. They didn't know what it was. And then they came back. So, you know, try to figure out from a few hundred years ago could be very difficult.
But they don't have any signs.
No. The Torah says clearly these are the only ones you can eat. V'chol sheret ta'eif asher le'arek baraglayim, any sheret ta'eif, any of these flying things that has four legs only without the two additional legs, sheket zulachem, they're despicable to you. Okay, this again, now the Gemara is going, the Pasuk is going into more of a practical halacha about it. It says like this, Ule'elo titamo, these are the ones that you become contaminated by touching them. Now, we're going to learn now, the Torah is going to go into various laws of tumah and tara, purity and impurity, with the press, just to explain an introduction, tumah and tara, like the Rambam says, has nothing to do with physical stuff. It has nothing to do with physical cleanliness or physical filth. It is a complete spiritual thing that has no logic, no basis in seichel. In fact, the Rambam writes, mikveh doesn't make you tahor. A mess, a dead body doesn't make you impure. The Rambam writes, God said, a dead body makes you impure and a mikveh makes you pure. In other words, there's no, what is Rambam saying? There's no reason why a mikveh should purify you, and there's no reason why a dead body should make you impure, because it's nothing to do with cleanliness. If you touch a dead body with gloves, you know, and you're not even touching the dead body, you become tamei. There's nothing to do with physical, it's a complete spiritual thing. And therefore, all the laws of tumah v'tahara, as we'll learn a few psukim, we'll see exactly what I'm talking about, there is no basis in seichel and logic for it. They don't make sense. Why this is tamei and this is not tamei, and why this is tamei if you hold it this way, if you hold it this way, you know, it's... I'll give you a simple example, what we're going to learn. I hope we'll get there today yet. There are different types of metals, vessels. Yeah? You have a vessel that's made out of cheres, earthenware, ceramic, any of these types of things. I'm holding myself to drink it. Kli cheres, an earthenware vessel, you know, pottery, ceramic, things like that. If something impure touches the outside, it does not become impure. Touch it. Mamish touches it. It does not become impure. The only way it becomes impure, if something impure goes into the airspace of the vessel, inside. That means, if a dead something that makes you tummy goes inside the air of the cup, even if it doesn't touch the walls of the cup, it becomes impure. If it touches it from the outside, it does not become impure. A metal vessel is just the opposite. If it touches it from the outside, it becomes impure. If it goes into the airspace but doesn't touch the walls of it, it doesn't become impure. Why? God said so. There's complete no logic in all these dinim. And we'll see even in these psukim, we'll soon see. Says like this. So le'elati tamo, these are what you become tummy for. Says like this. Kol anegeh benivlasam, whoever touches the dead carcass of these bugs or flying creepy objects, yitma ad ha'erev becomes tummy until the evening. Now the Gemara says clearly, it doesn't mean that you become impure and you wait until the evening you become pure. That's not what it means. It means over here you go to the mikveh. Even though you went to the mikveh, concerning certain laws, you have to wait until the evening. That means if somebody touched the dead carcass of an animal, you're late. If somebody touches the dead carcass of an animal, okay, you become tummy. By the way, while we're on it, let me just explain this thing. If you shecht an animal, if you slaughter a kosher animal, the dead meat does not become tummy. That's why you go to the butcher, you touch meat, you don't become tummy. It's a dead body, right? Animals which were slaughtered do not become tummy. Animals that weren't slaughtered. That were not slaughtered.
Like even a cow?
Yeah. Becomes impure. In other words, if a cow dies, just natural causes, and you touch the cow, you become tummy. Now, for us today, all of this is irrelevant.
Because we're all tummy.
No, that's not the reason. As we'll soon see in the Pasuk, the only ones that are forbidden to become impure are Kohanim with a human corpse. These dinim only applied in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And even in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if you wanted to touch a dead carcass of an animal and not eat truma and not go into the Beis HaMikdash and not to eat korban, there's nothing wrong with it.
You mean purposely there was nothing wrong with it?
Yeah. The only time it was forbidden to become impure was, the Gemara says, on Yom Tov. Because Yom Tov, every Jew had an obligation to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Every Jew had to bring the korbanos for the Chag, Korban Chagiga, Ol Asriya, right, the Grav and the Seder play for the two korbanos. Then it was forbidden to become tummy. The rest of the year, there is absolutely nothing wrong for a kohen to have a carcass business. You know? Just he couldn't eat truma if he was tamei. Or, for instance, if a kohen did come in touch with a dead carcass, he went to the mikveh, waited until evening, and right away was able to eat truma.
Evening is like after Maariv?
After Maariv, he was allowed to eat truma.
After Maariv.
That's the first Mishnah in Brachas. The first Mishnah in the whole Shas, the whole first Mishnah, the first of all Mishnah is, May Masay Kedin as a Shema Ba'arvin, or Ba'arvin, in Hebrew or Aramaic, when do you allowed to read the Mishnah in? I mean, when do you read the Shema of night? Mishah shakayanim nechnasim lechol betrumasim. When the kayanim are allowed to go eat truma. What does it mean? Go when the kayanim are allowed to go eat truma. The kayanim that became tamei, not in dead bodies. That's what bugs, whatever it may be. They went to the mikvah. They waited until evening, until night, nightfall. And then they were allowed to eat truma. That's what the Torah says, v'tamei ad ha'odev. But it doesn't mean if you don't go to the mikveh. If you don't go to the mikveh, you could stay tamei for 100 years. The pasuk is saying, if you go to the mikveh, nevertheless, yitmar ha'odev. But, and just watch the psukim, you'll see different concepts. V'chol ha'neseh minivlasam, anyone who carries the carcass, okay, even if he doesn't actually touch it, yechab is begodav, you have to wash your clothing, v'tamei ha'arev, and your tummy until the evening. And here's a very interesting din. If what the pasuk is saying over here, if you have a dead carcass of these bugs, by the way, like we said last week, no living creature can become tummy.
No living creature
can become tummy, unless people need the zav, you know, the emissions from the body. But no animal who is alive can ever become tummy. Remember last week we said, if a dead body is being carried by a horse, you know, a horse is pushing, the dead body's mamish on the horse, and the horse is driving it somewhere, the horse does not become tummy.
But the human does.
Human does.
Only a Jew or a non-Jew?
Only Jews.
Non-Jews.
Laws of purity and impurity only belong to Jews. Even I'll give an example. A woman who's not Jewish does not have the laws of Nida. Only a Jew becomes impure with bodily omissions and things. But here we're talking about only Jews. Okay, if a guy touches a carcass, he does not become tamei. Now, again, the Pasuk says like this. If you see in Pasuk 24, it says like this. Hanegeh b'nevlasam, if you touch the dead carcass of these bugs, you tummy until the erev, until the evening, if you go to mikveh. What about your clothing?
Didn't say.
It doesn't say. It just says you are tummy until the evening, which means your clothing are not tummy. Then the Torah says, "Hanaisi nivlasam." If you carry the dead carcass, that means you don't even touch it. Then yechabes begodav, your clothing need to be washed, not in a washing machine, in a mikveh. You have to immerse the garments in the mikveh, and you also become tummy until the evening, which is a very interesting thing. If I carry a carcass in a box that I'm not even touching the carcass. Right? I'm just carrying it in a box, in a bag. Okay? I become tummy and my clothing become tummy. But if I just touch the carcass, then only I become tummy, not my clothing. Does it make sense? No. Because l'cha'edah, if I touch it, it should be more tummy than if I'm just carrying it. But the Torah says no. If you touch it, you become tummy and not your clothing. If you carry it, you and your clothing become tummy.
Just you and your clothing, like say if you were to gather them up in a blanket or something to move them, that blanket or whatever would not be tummy?
Yeah, that blanket's tummy, so, and everything
so
you're wearing is tummy.
The back of the cart becomes tummy, or you said in a box, the box becomes tummy?
Yeah. The garments become tamei. I don't know about cars.
How about the shoes?
The shoes also. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, okay, if you wanted to wear clothing, if you wanted to eat truma, your garments had to be pure. So what happens if your garments became impure? You took the garments and put them in the mikveh. Like your table dishes in the mikveh in the olden times, unless they wanted to throw them out.
What if you forgot and you eat it?
Well, then the punishment is...
No, but if you forgot, you don't know. You really don't
know. You don't know that what?
That your suit or your clothing is tamei.
Well, in those days, they have to know.
You have to make sure.
Do you know in the time today, I mean, it would be unheard of, but in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it had to be. When a woman was in her nidah period, okay, when she was in through the menstrual cycle until she went to the mikveh, a woman had special garments that everybody knew she was in nidah.
That makes sense.
Well, yeah, try it today.
Huh?
Somewhere it originated that women don't touch the Torah.
Yeah, that's all part of it, even though Torah doesn't come. No, the reason is because we're jumping the gun a little bit, but we need to learn all these things anyway for these psukim, so it really doesn't matter what order we're doing them. There is different stages of tumah. Okay? The ultimate impurity is a dead human body. That's the ultimate level of impurity. That is called Avi Avei Satuma, the grandfather Tuma. That is the ultimate impurity, that even Moshe Rabbeinu, by the red hefresh, he couldn't understand how does that become pure. Even Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand that. Okay? But besides that, there's what's called Av HaTuma, father Tuma. Then you have the children. First, second, third, fourth, fifth. Okay? A person who has like a zav or zava or nida, meaning they have bodily emissions that render them impure, they are what's called av hatuma, grandfather clause of tuma. If they touch food, that food becomes rishon. If that food touches other food, that other food becomes sheni. Okay? In chulin, meaning by everyday stuff, that's all it goes. It doesn't go further. For truma, because truma is holier, it goes up to shlishi. Hegdish goes up to revi, fourth level. Paraduma, even five sometimes. Okay? Now, the din is, people, not food, people or kelim could only become tamei from an av hatumah. That means, if a person who's av hatumah touches me, I become tamei. But I become what's called rishon, right? But if I give you shalom aleichem, then you don't become tamei. But if you would be food, and I touch the food, that would become tamei. Okay, again, where's the seichel? There's no seichel. It's completely illogical. Now, if a man or a woman were tamei, okay, let's say a woman is in nidor, a man was a zav, same thing, male and female, yeah, and they became tamei. So, I cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash if I'm tamei. I cannot eat hegdish. If I'm a kohen, I cannot eat truma. And it's capital punishment if you do it intentionally, misa b'dei shemayim, God kills you. Okay, it's capital punishment from heaven. So if I'm an avatuma, and I meet you in the street, and I give you shalom aleichem, or by mistake you bang into me, guess what? You become tamei. If you become tamei, you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, you can't eat truma, you can't eat hegdish. You can't do all that stuff. Right? So therefore, in those days, let's say women would eat truma. If you're a wife of a kohen, you ate truma. If your husband brought a carbon shlomim, the peace offering, everybody in the family was allowed to eat it. But if you're a tamei, you were not allowed to eat it. Right? So if a woman, let's say she's a nida, and nobody knows she's a nida, and she says hello to her friend, you know, shalom aleichem, that person becomes tamei. And that's no good. And they're not going to know their tummy if you don't tell them. Right? So therefore, it was mandatory that if you're tummy, people had to know that you were tummy. There was no choice. People had to know that you were tummy. And the din is like we said before, if a person becomes tummy, let's say a woman becomes a nida, a man becomes a zav, for 100 years, if they didn't go to the mikvah, they're still tummy. They're still impure. It does. There's no statute of limitation that the tumah runs out. Until you go to the mikvah, the tumah stays full force. 100 years later.
Even now?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, where is it practical today? A man cannot have relations with a woman when she's a nida. Okay? So once a girl at one time gets her period and she's a nida, until she goes to the mikveh, hopefully when she gets married, until those all those years, she's tummy. And if somebody has relations with her, it's a veir of kares. It's a veir of, like eating chametz on Pesach or eating on Yom Kippur. Same type of a punishment. But the tumah stays. She could be now 98 years old. If she didn't go to the mikveh since the last time she was tummy, she's still tummy. What difference does it make today? The only difference is in relations or that's it. Because today there's... Or a kohen coming in contact with a human body. That's it.
What if she went swimming in the ocean and didn't know that she was like a mikveh?
You're asking very
smart. I'm just saying.
No.
A river or an ocean swimming, one summer and all that, without knowing that
there
that might be a.
There are too many details involved. It would take off a biblical tumah, not rabbinic tumah, because a woman needs to do certain checkings, otherwise it's not good. The Rebbe, interestingly, became public knowledge, but. The Rebbe instructed in certain cities that they should try to make swimming pools to be even a passable kosher mikveh, that women that went swimming, even though they're going with bathing suits, but the water does get in through the bathing suit, that b'di'eved, it might be at least biblically removing the nida status, and at least people would be sinning less. Without them even knowing about it.
Right.
Without even them knowing about it.
There are such pools? Not salami, is it?
No. Salami is only good for the men. What?
But the water doesn't get... You cannot impurify water,
can you? No, a mikveh never becomes impure. A mikveh can never become impure.
What about the swimming pool? Because it's water.
Right, it cannot become impure. The question is it a kosher mikveh, though? That's a different story.
Rabbi Schusterman, I heard that standing in the shower for a certain amount of time.
For a man is good, but that's not what we're talking about here. For these dinim, it's no good.
So the swimming pool, if it's not a mikveh, it could be impure, right?
It cannot become impure. The only question is it a kosher mikveh to purify? Water can never become impure. You can take a dead body and dunk it in the mikveh for 2 years. The water is still not tummy. It's still a kosher mikveh. Otherwise, every time somebody goes to the mikveh, the water should become impure.
But the swimming pool doesn't consider as a mikveh.
The swimming pool is not a mikveh. For men, it is a mikveh. If it's in the ground. For women, it's not a mikveh because you need to have rainwater. Okay? What's called mayim she'uvim, drawn water. She'uvim means she'uv, like simchat beis ha'she'eva. Water which is drawn in a keli, in a vessel, automatically becomes disqualified from being a kosher mikveh. Not for men. For men, mayim she'uvim is enough for their impurities. For women, dishes, by the way, kelim, when you have to table in a mikveh, it has to be the same mikveh which is kosher for women. You can't table kelim in a swimming pool, even though a man could go to a swimming pool, but you can't table dishes in a swimming pool. It's worthless. Okay? Now, when a swimming pool is made, water is drawn. How do you get water into the swimming pool? It goes through pipes. Once it goes through pipes, it goes through a keli, a vessel. Once it goes through a vessel, then it becomes not pure natural rainwater. That's why, like we discussed in the Gemara Shemayit Katan, I think we're discussing this. Today's mikveh. You go, let's say, to piko mikveh, right? Go to a mikveh, which is, even the men's mikveh is really kosher for women also, because it's made exactly the same way. Okay? Now, the water that you immerse in is not rainwater. It is halachic rainwater.
Meaning a certain percentage of city water and then 2% rainwater.
No, sir.
Something
no.
Like that.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
In order to have a kosher mikveh, okay, what we're talking about, whether in these psukim, the mikveh you needed in these psukim, if it's a natural body of water, like the ocean, practically is freezing, so it's hard to immerse properly in an ocean. But as far as the criteria of a mikveh, the best mikveh in the world is the ocean. And you know why? Because at the beginning of Chumash it says, Ule mikveh hamayim koreyamim. To the mikveh of the water, Hashem called seas, oceans. Okay? But you have to know, if it's a man-made lake, it's one din. If it's a natural lake, it's a different din. Okay? Now, the ideal concept, again, mikveh, the laws of mikveh are very, very detailed and complex and intricate. Okay? But just to discuss generally, because this is what we're learning about now, the laws of Tumah Tahara, it's important to understand what the concept and how a mikveh works. In order to be kosher, you need to have 40 saw, which is a measurement, of pure natural rainwater that got there in the ground in a non-leaky place, because a mikveh that leaks is not kosher. It's called zechalin. If it leaks out of the mikveh, it's not kosher. It has to be in the ground. In other words, you cannot take these plastic swimming pools that you buy for the kids, you know, put it outside in last night's rain. Unless you have another 30 rains like this, you live in London or Seattle, where you got plenty of rain, and just put it on the ground and fill it up with rainwater, it's not going to be a kosher mikveh. Because it has to be connected to the ground. In the ground or connected to the ground. Okay? Now, when you have a mikveh, you have a mikveh is 40 saw of rainwater. Now the Gemara says, how much is 40 saw? You know, what? How much water, what's the size of a hole that takes a 40 saw? The Gemara says, 1 cubit by 1 cubit by 3 cubits. Okay? An amma, for mikveh yamachmet, so we're going to use an amma 2 feet. It has to be 2 feet by 2 feet by 6 feet. Okay? 2 feet times 2 is 4 times 6 is 24 cubic feet of water. I think in gallons, it depends what shear you go by, it's like 100 gallons or so. I mean, a little bit more, I think. I could look it up in a second, but it's approximately like 100 gallons, I'd say, okay? Maybe more. It has to be 24 cubic feet of water. Now, how do they build a mikveh? How do you get rainwater? Because see, if you live in a city where it rains, they have the roof. Okay, on top of the mikveh is the roof. Yeah? The roof is made, like any roof, that water shouldn't stay on the roof. Because during a rainstorm, if water stays on the roof, there's no place to go, it's going to cave in, you're going to have a leaky roof. So they make the roofs a little bit slanty. Okay? So they make the roof slanted, and at the bottom of the slant, they have special pipes, okay, that have no right angles in them. They're not even made out of metal, okay? Because once you have a pipe with the right angle, then in that corner, water is being held by a vessel. The right angle is actually a cup that's holding the water, okay? So they have the water coming down from the roof. The water comes down from the pipe, and even if it has to curve, it's done in a way that goes like this, that there's no way water could be held. Okay, there's no right angle. And water goes into the, rainwater goes into this compartment that's minimal 24 cubic feet. Okay, that is where the rainwater goes. But you can't toivel in rainwater. Why? Number one, the second you filter the water to clean it, and it goes through a pipe, it's not rainwater anymore.
Wait, say that again?
Once you take rainwater and filter it, right?
Uh-huh.
Then it's going through a vessel.
Oh.
The filter is a vessel.
Right.
So then it's automatically not rainwater anymore.
It's contained.
Huh?
It's contained.
It's contained. Anytime water is contained, it's no good. Unless it's contained directly in the ground. Right? So, well, how do they keep a mikveh clean? By the way, you ever toivel dishes in the kelim mikveh?
They're black.
They're black. You know why? Those things are straight rainwater. They have pipes coming down from the roof straight into that hole. Now, because people are not immersing in it, they don't care how dirty it is. That is actual rainwater that they don't change for a long period, especially if it doesn't rain a lot, right? So that's what you're tabling your dishes into, actual rainwater. But you can't do that with people because the mikveh is going to be dirty. Who's going to want to table in the mikveh? Okay? So what they do is, they have, and here's different, the Chabad way of doing it. They're not the Chabad way of doing it, but the bottom line is the same thing. You have the rainwater, either on top of it, or next to it, you have another compartment with city water. Okay? Now, if you ever notice, there's a hole in the mikveh and the wall. If you look at the Biko mikveh, not only is there a hole on the side, there's also holes at the bottom. Okay? Because the Biko mikveh has rainwater underneath what we immerse in and on the side of what we immerse in, both. Okay? Now, there's a concept called Hashaka. Hashaka literally means kissing. Nashika means to kiss. The din is, if city water kisses rainwater, it becomes rainwater. That's the halacha. If city water kisses rainwater, it becomes rainwater.
So when they clean the mikveh, they shut that up and
then... One second. So now, what do you do? So let's say you fill up city water, okay, which is kissing the rainwater. In the Piko mikveh, it's kissing it twice, on the side and underneath. Okay? Then, that city water becomes rainwater. Now when you filter, not the rainwater, when you filter the city water, okay, and when it goes through the filter, the way it's made, and this is intricate, I'm not getting into now, the way it goes back into the mikveh, the water becomes rainwater again, even before it kisses it. There's certain things they do that should be considered halachic rainwater, even before it goes back into the regular pool, city water, which in addition to kissing, it has additional things that make it kosher along the way.
Even though it doesn't touch the rainwater?
It does touch the rainwater.
What you said, when they clean it.
The water is drawn out. Picture a mikveh, right? The water is drawn out of the where the men, where the people immerse.
Right.
Okay, it's called Ber HaTvila, the Ber that you immerse in. That rain, that city water goes out through the pipes, through a filter, and then it comes back into the mikveh. Now, even if nothing is done, when it comes back into the rest of the mikveh, that city water is now rainwater.
Right.
So the new water from that went through the filter that's touching this water. Again, becomes mikveh water.
Right. But it's not touching the water yet.
It does. It comes into the, once it hits,
so it automatically becomes
rainwater again. Right.
Okay.
So the rainwater, you leave there and you don't change the rainwater.
Right. But now, when they take that water out, they must seal the other holes of the rainwater.
They do, or else the filter, the pipes, it depends how them, if the... If there's a step, whatever, it's done in a way that the rainwater is not taken out. You're right. Because if you pump out the rainwater,
so
don't have any rainwater left.
So no,
now, one second.
Yeah.
What happens if you live in Arizona
there's no rain?
Now, How are you going to get rainwater in Nevada, Arizona, or for that matter, sometimes in L.A.? It doesn't rain half a year. And even the half a year, the other half a year barely rains. Okay? Right. So how do you get, how do you build a mikveh if there's no rain?
Ground sources?
Yeah, if you have a well underneath, you don't have a problem. Because a well, you can, but it can't be pumped up. Once you pump the water up from a well, then again it's going through a pump.
So it has to be a really shallow
one. So, what you do is, there's something in the universe called snow.
Snow. They ship in snow?
Yep. Now, snow, when it melts,
can be contained.
Is rainwater. Snow is rain.
But it can be contained as
once snow. No. Now, how do you get snow to come into a mikveh? Now, the problem is, if you take a shovel and dig snow, the shovel becomes a vessel. So that means the snow, which is rainwater, is no longer rainwater because it went into a vessel. Right? Then if you take the snow and you put it into a container,
it becomes a vessel.
Then it's another vessel. Correct? So therefore you have to bring snow with unvessels, with non-vessels. How do you bring snow in a non-vessel? So they do it like this. They take, and they you have to do special. It's a lot of work. It's not so simple. You get shovels that have holes in them. Once it has holes, it's not a vessel anymore because it can't hold anything. If you put water in it, it's not going to hold. It's going to go through the hole. So you take snow with a holed shovel. Forget my English, okay? Just get the point across. With a holed shovel. Now, again, but if you put it into a box, the box is a keli. So you know those milk crates that have holes at the bottom of them? Okay. So they take the snow with a holy shovel, with a hole in it, they put it into a holy box. Now, if you have a freezer truck, otherwise you're not going to have...
It's a container.
The problem is, the floor of the... If you put a box with a hole in it on the floor of the truck, now again becomes a vessel, because now the box doesn't leak. So you need to put it on those boards in a way that... There's space that it could still leak out from the container. So then the container is not a container anymore. And the floor is not, because it's not on the floor. It's not resting on the floor.
So
it's resting
on pallets?
Yeah, you put it on pallets.
The pallets are a separation between...
Right, so then there's nothing stuffing the hole of the bottom of the crate.
Like 2x4s.
Yeah, whatever. 2x4s, pallets, whatever it is. Then they bring... The freezer truck to the mikveh. Now, everybody knows, from a lot of snow, you get very little water.
Really?
Try it.
1/5 almost.
Probably even less. So sometimes you need to make a few trips to the snow to bring a lot of snow.
That's a lot of water. You're talking about 100
gallons,
how it doesn't
melt,
right?
Huh? No, once you put it into the mikveh...
In freezer trucks.
Oh,
like a freezer truck?
Freezer truck.
Yeah, the
they sell ice cream. You know, they sell ice cubes in Arizona too, by the way. And ice cream. Yeah, I'm sure they do. Do they? Shaina?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
I don't know if they sell Chol Yisrael, but they sell ice cream. And ice cubes. So basically, then you have to empty out the stuff through these shovels again, into crates, into the mikveh. So then it becomes rainwater. Halachic rainwater, not real rainwater.
That's a lot of snow for 100 gallons, right?
I have to look up again. There's something like that. Whatever.
But they have to put it actually into the mikveh.
Yeah.
They cannot put it into a container.
No, you can't put it in a container and lower it. You have to...
Right.
Again, it takes a lot of manpower and a lot of time.
Put it into a dry mikveh. It's a completely dry mikveh.
Yeah.
But once you have the rainwater set up, do you have to replenish it constantly, or how does that work?
You don't have to. It's better to replenish it, but in a place where you don't have a lot of rain, and if you're going to empty out the rainwater, and then you're going to wait 6 months for rain, you're not going to have a mikveh for 6 months.
Or wait for trucks, snow to come.
Right, which is, you know, it's very unpractical. So people change the water. It depends. Some mikvahs that, the newer mikvahs that are built, are very interesting. They have what's called an eitzer min atzad. When they build the mikvah, they build it with an extra tank of rainwater.
Oh, that's smart.
Okay, then when they want to change the water, they empty out the rainwater, and it has to be connected in kosher ways, that it doesn't go through pipes that are vessels. Then you refill the mikveh that you just emptied. And then, you know, then you keep it when it rains. It just gathers there, and then when you need to, you do it again. That's the best way of doing it. A lot of mikvehs, the older mikvehs, they weren't that ingenious to think of it. They didn't have place or whatever. And they didn't do it.
Now, in general, is the ocean always considered... Not a problem.
The ocean is a great...
Like
yeah, the ocean's a great mikveh.
Rivers too.
Rivers, if they're natural rivers, yeah, that don't dry up in the summer.
But you don't really have to look for special conditions or anything.
The ocean is the best mikveh.
Ocean is ocean.
In a practical sense, especially women, are not encouraged to table in an ocean because of practicality. The water's freezing. You need to go at night. You need somebody watching you to be able to make sure that there's no hair on the... Whatever it is, like the regular shomeres. And, you know, you're going in an ocean, who knows who can pop in at any second. No, it's just a very difficult thing. But, for instance, in Hawaii, at the present, there is no mikveh. They use the ocean. But they have places, secluded places over there in Hawaii. In Hawaii, the water is not as cold.
In the daytime, you can go and there's nobody.
Women have to go at night. But, we're not learning all the laws now, but, so over there, they still use the ocean. But it's not encouraged.
They do it similar to like they do for bathing. Like
you can't use the Atlantic Ocean outside New York City in today's weather for a mikveh.
Oh my God, no.
In Russia, that's what they use.
Florida.
Used to chop ice. Again, but because of the impracticality of it, the answer is, can a woman use the ocean? No. Are there exceptional cases? Yeah, you know, if the certain guidelines are met. But it's not because the ocean is not a kosher mikveh. The ocean is the best mikveh in the world. You can't get better mikveh than the ocean.
Right, but the conditions in order for...
Correct, that's the problem. But for dishes, what's the problem? Dishes are not a problem. You take the dishes, put them in... Right, and you're not immersing the whole body, you're just immersing a dish, a pot, whatever.
Can the water before it goes into a mikveh become not fit for the mikveh water besides being becoming into a vessel? Like somebody touching it, like a goy or a tongue?
No.
Into the water could make it not fit to be a mikveh water?
No.
Since all water ultimately...
By the way, this is just the general... there's infinite dinim over here that I didn't even mention, but this is the general concept of how a mikveh... how we travel today in seemingly city water, which is not rainwater, when you need rainwater to be a mikveh. So this is the whole halacha concept of it. What?
It seems to be the problem is not... rainwater, it's more the vessel, because all water originates from rainwater, really.
Correct. There's yeah, but once it goes through a vessel, it's not rainwater anymore.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
City water comes from rain originally, but it goes into a vessel, that's the problem.
Correct. That's the problem.
Can I ask you a question before?
What?
Isn't it true that the body, particularly from a Jewish body, comes from a very high source? Therefore, why would a tzaddik, when he passed or she passes away, be tumah? Because they were completely pure, and the body itself is completely from a higher place even than the neshama, according to what I understood. So it doesn't make sense that would be impure.
That is extremely big halachic controversy. The Gemara says.
Are you saying a tzaddik or a Jew?
Tzaddik. A real one.
Right.
The Gemara says tzaddikim b'misasim kruim chayim. A tzaddik, even when he's dead, is alive. Right? Rashi, even when he's alive, is called dead. Okay. The Gemara says, in Ksubis, mishameis Rebbe, the day Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi died, batla kuhuna. So the whole argument in the Rishonim, what does that mean? Tosfos in Ksubis, it's at the, all the way at the end of Ksubis. Tosfos in Ksubis says that, what does the Gemara mean? That the day Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi died, they allowed Koyanim to come in contact with the body. And in the same Tosfos, one of the Bali Tosfos was, his name was Reb Chaim HaKoyen. Reb Chaim HaKoyen, that was his name. He said, if I would have been there when Rabbeinu Tam passed away, you know, Rashi's grandson Rabbeinu Tam, I would have touched his body as a Kohen. And you're talking about the holy Rishonim. That's the whole issue with Kivrei Tzadikim, the graves of Tzadikim, do they become Tomei or not? But that's why in Eretz Yisrael, and even, let's say, when the Rebbe made, for the previous Rebbe, when his father-in-law passed away, he made the Ohel, or now the Ohel, but the, if you notice, there's a white fence all the way around the grave.
Really,
that is a mechitza that separates the grave from the Kohanim. And there's no overhead, there's no overhang. So therefore, the only question is how a Kohen gets to that place. Well, no, they drive. Well, now they have, not anymore. They made it, and they actually have walls. They don't use the boxes anymore. Now they have actually, there's a fence all the way from the house over there to the oil that has mamash mechitza.
That's for the Kohanim, though?
For the Kohanim.
Wow. So they can go there.
Yeah. And Yisrael also, all the holy kvarim, they made in ways, the Rabbanim made in ways with mechitzas and various things, the Kohanim are allowed to go.
This is also good for the pregnant women? Or pregnant women should not go to the
Ohel.
I don't know.
Pregnant women have a minig not to go to cemeteries, but it says kivrei tzaddikim, they can go. Anyway, why did I wait? I don't want to say waste time, but these are all relevant to what we're going to be learning in the next few psukim. Okay, so anyway, if you touch a nevela, you're tamei until the evening. If you carry a nevela, your tummy, your garments are tummy until you put them into the mikveh, and you wait until the evening. The chola behema for every animal, ashi mafres is parsa, that has split hoofs, v'shasa eina, but not completely stiff, v'geira nana t'maila, and it doesn't chew its cut. Meaning, what this pasuk is saying is, any treifa animal, he says, t'meim heim lochem, are tummy if they're dead. Okay, and obviously you can't shech them because of the treif. Kol anegei bahem yitma, anything that touches them becomes tamei. Okay, so now the Torah says like this: if you touch the carcass of an animal, you become tamei. V'chol heilach al kapa, of anything that walks on its paws, you know, like it says a dog, cat, bears, all that. V'chol chayal alecha sarab tamei mem lachem, all the tamedik animals. Kol anegei b'nevlasam yitma ra'erif. If you touch them, you go to the mikveh, you're tummy until the evening. But, ha-neseyas nivlasam, but if you carry the carcass, even if you don't touch it, like we learned before, yechabez begodov, then your garments become tummy, you need to wash your garments in the mikveh. V'tummy ado-erev, and you're tummy, the person is tummy until the evening, t'meim hei malachim, they're contaminated. So the Torah is saying like this, if you shech the cow is not tummy. No problem with it. All these things, again, like we said before, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to touch them. The Torah just tells you a fact. If you touch them, you come tummy, you can't go into the base of English. Yeah?
How does that apply today,
like, for people who do tamaris and things? We're all tummy anyway. A kohen cannot do a dara.
Right. But, so this is only talking about tamar, or this is
anytime a person goes to a cemetery, they're tummy.
Right.
You go to a funeral, you're tummy. Today, it doesn't matter unless if you're a kohen. Mashiach comes, there's going to be long lines for the Paraduma.
Yeah, but if somebody goes to a funeral and somebody's not Tamei, and they don't tell them they went to the funeral, 2 days later they go to their home, they go to the home, they become Tamei.
Right, that's why today we're all Tamei.
Yeah, so nobody knows anyway.
So we're all not tamei, what's the point of the mikveh?
No. The mikveh is for a woman is to be able to have relations.
No, I understand.
But otherwise, you mean why do men go to mikveh, let's say?
Yeah.
Because they want to daven with purity and that's it.
But in general, within 5 minutes of having already been there, you could accidentally become tamei anyway by touching the wrong person or doing.
Yeah, but it's a there are different tumas and different purifications. It's all different. It's all different types of purification and impurification.
Is it good to go to the mikveh every day or once a week from there?
A lot of men go every day.
Every day.
Mm-hmm. Chassidim usually try to go every day if they can. Huh?
Erev
Shabbos. They go a second time. I mean, I don't want to say a typical chassid because I don't know what that means. But many chassidim go 8 times a week to the mikveh. 7 days of the week and Friday afternoon again. Okay, v'zelochem pasuk chavtes. V'zelochem atamei b'sheretz asheretz aloretz. Now the Torah says a new din. The Torah is going to be mentioning 8 small animals that their carcasses are tamei. Nothing else is. Okay, these are 8 creeping animals. Not big animals, creeping animals. They're called the Shmeiner Sheratzim. These 8 animals, and only these 8, and don't ask why, the Torah says these 8 make you tummy. What are they? Hachelet, the carcasses of these animals. Hachelet achbar tzav lemineil. Now, chelet, Rashi says, is a weasel. Some people translate it as a mole. Achbar is a mouse, but it could be a rat too. Hatzav, Rashi says it's like a frog. Or a toad. Naka is a hedgehog or porcupine. According to the Radak, you bring it over here, it's a viper. Kayach is a lizard. Halta'a, Rashi also says, a type of a lizard. Vachemet is a snail. Vatinshames is the, it's not the bird, it's a mole or a type of lizard. These are 8 bugs. That the Torah says these creepy things, these are the only bugs that their carcasses are tummy. Which means, if you touch a dead ant, you don't become tummy. If you touch a dead cockroach, you don't become tummy. Dead fly also not. No, fly isn't because fly is flying. Talking about the creepy, the crawling things. What?
It's so complicated.
Why is it complicated? But it says over here. That's the pasuk lamin aleph though. Ela tmeim lochem b'chol asheretz. These are only bugs that are tamei. Kol anegei b'hem b'meisam. Whoever touches them, okay. Yitmar erev. So the mefarshim explained. The Mishnah says. Here, the Torah doesn't say about carrying them. And here's another unique din. These 8 bugs, the carcasses of these 8 bugs, can only make you tummy if you touch them. If you carry them without touching them, you don't become tummy at all. And by the other things, carrying it makes you tummy and your garments tummy. Touching them only makes you tummy. By these bugs, because what did the Torah? The Torah doesn't speak about carrying them. The Torah says if you touch them, you become tamei. So if you touch a mouse, you become tamei, a dead mouse. But if you carry the mouse that's dead, you don't become tamei.
Very lucky with a shovel or something.
Yeah.
Carry it without.
Or shovel or bag. Well, yeah, whatever. If you don't touch it, you don't become tamei. Okay, now it's a whole new thing, so we're going to...